Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we will be discussing the news from April 29th to May 5th. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric, sure. So just a couple of quick announcements first. We have the ETHub community and forum call happening very soon. I think it's about 14 hours from now, if I'm doing my time conversion correctly. We've sent out the invites to the people that will be on the call, and we've also put out the call details on our socials. Everyone will be able to watch the live stream, which will be done via YouTube. Look out for that one. And also, Eric, I believe a congratulations are in order. You joined Gnosis this week. You announced it on Twitter. Did you want to walk us through what you're going to be doing at Gnosis?
Yeah, sure. I guess first, I'm very excited. I've kind of been, in the Ethereum space for almost, 5 years now, but I've never been full time in it. Always just been dedicating my free time to either learning or researching or connecting with people. And then obviously over the last few months doing ETHub with you. I'm super excited. Gnosis had an opportunity and worked with me to make it work for a full time gig. And I'm going to be kind of working on their product team, kind of just helping, build out their products and their product suite. They've got a lot of cool stuff going, especially around, they of course have their prediction markets, but they have Gnosis Safe and the Dutch X, and they're starting to experiment with some DAO stuff as well. So yeah, I'm just going to be working with mainly on the product side, and I'm super excited about it. So yeah, now I'm finally full-time in the space, which is a great feeling.
Yeah, sounds really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do at Gnosis and what Gnosis puts out. I know they've got a DX DAO white paper they put out, which they'll be launching end of this month, which I included in the newsletter if people want to see the details about that. So yeah, exciting times. Cool. So into the news now. So Bitfinex, more drama about Bitfinex. We spoke about last week how it came to light that they lost about $850 million to some banking shenanigans, which means Tether reserves were Tether was only backed up by 74% of cash, so it wasn't one-to-one backing. And then I think the day after that came out, so it was a bit after the podcast, the rumors started circulating that Bitfinex was going to do a kind of IEO, initial exchange offering, for a token and raising up to $1 billion. So over the course of the week, a lot more details came out about this. And yeah, it's basically they will be doing this. Some of the money will be used to kind of make that 74% whole for Tether, so people can redeem for that sort of thing. It's really funny that they apparently claim that they've already got subscriptions for up to $500 million from investors. I don't know who's investing in this, given, Bitfinex and Tether in general are quite, shady and have been for years. But I guess, there's lots of money in the world, so they probably found some money somewhere. I'm not sure if any of the, I don't know if you can call them reputable fund managers or investors within this space are going to invest in this, because it's a $1 million minimum investment. It's just really weird. It's funny because I think the only exchanges that can do this sort of thing where they issue their own token, obviously we have Binance that has their own token and a bunch of other Asian-based exchanges. But we've also now got Bitfinex because they're not based in the US either. I don't think we're ever going to see like a US exchange issue their own token in this manner, in this cowboy manner, because they're much more regulated. So I fully expect them to maybe issue their own token in the future, but not unless it's in a regulated way, as we've already seen with Coinbase and Gemini issuing their own stable coins that are completely regulated and even have backdoors in them, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I guess first, like you said, like who in their right mind would actually invest in this? I don't know where the money's coming from. I mean, the only thing I could think of is Bitfinex is so shady to begin with, and now they have their own token. I'm fairly convinced they'll probably just pump the token on their own books without much actual legitimacy behind it. I mean, obviously that's speculation, but it could definitely happen, right? I mean, anytime you're, I mean, Bitfinex has proven to be very shady up to this point, and they're going to have their own token. Who knows what they can do to manipulate that? So potentially investors, you know, see, well, why would they ever let it go down on their own exchange? So maybe that's why people are stepping in, because they just see a gain here. I don't know. I guess shadier stuff has happened in the crypto space, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, this is like never ending drama. I'm so over it. Like, how long can we talk about Tether, right? And it's just, I know a lot of people, well, I don't know if a lot of people, like, I don't think I know anybody that has Tether. So I'm not really sure who's holding these reserves, but I know a lot of business, like Binance, a lot of their volume up until this incident were based on USDT, Tether. So I know a lot of kind of the crypto, some of the crypto space, and a lot of the volume is around this. So I know that's why people are still worked up about it. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of like real adoption news, like E-Trade and Fidelity going to start trading crypto. And it seems like we can never stop focusing on, in my opinion, this nonsense drama that in the long run doesn't even matter. I mean, if you have Tether, you've had warning enough to this point to get out of it. So at this point, I don't feel bad for anybody that's going to get burnt by this. So I think it's time that for everybody just kind of move on, and hopefully Bitfinex can just kind of die out over time. Although there's a lot of, you know, things going on behind the scenes there, I'm sure, that'll prevent that from happening.
Yeah, it's totally shady. I mean, Bitfinex kind of has that moat of shadiness. I think they kind of pride themselves on it, and the market rewards them for that sort of thing, which is, I mean, not unusual, I guess, because there's a lot of shady things going on just in general, even in like the legacy financial system, right? And there's always going to be demand for that sort of stuff, and for people to move large amounts of money without the government tracking them and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, not surprising to see something like this, but yeah, curious to see how it actually plays out when the token's live, and as you said, see if it's actually, you know, pumped in some kind of way by the exchange itself or some market makers or whatever. I fully expect it to be manipulated. Most things in crypto seem to be manipulated.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, I don't even know how much I believe the trueness behind the Binance coin pump BNB too, right? I mean, who knows? It's all hearsay. But any token that represents an exchange that's trading and on their exchange in the crypto world, can you really believe the, it just screams of like the whole Gox Willybot thing to me.
Yeah, exactly. It seems that we haven't learned our lesson, but you know, did we expect us to learn our lesson? Probably not.
Nope.
So on to next bit of news. There were some more details around Facebook stablecoin released this week. We have discussed this in the podcast, I think it was a couple times. So yeah, obviously Facebook has plans to issue their own stablecoin, and more details came out about this. So it's codenamed Project Libra. It would be an entire payments network, not just a stablecoin itself. You know, I think we speculated on this on the podcast anyway, that it would be kind of integrated with Facebook's other services like WhatsApp and things like that, and be used to pay for things. And you know, it may be integrated into Facebook's core ads engine that rewards users for viewing ads and then purchasing goods, kind of like loyalty points. This is actually in direct competition with something like Basic Attention Token and Brave, how it rewards users for kind of viewing ads. I mean, it is in competition, but maybe it's more complementary than competitory, just because of the fact that they kind of serve different, I guess, markets. But Facebook obviously has the massive user base, like billions of daily active users using all their products, Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, things like that. And Facebook has been making a big push into kind of e-commerce over the past couple years. And I only think that's going to become, you know, a bigger push from the company, especially if they integrate something like Facebook Coin, which, you know, there isn't that many details about this, but people are still speculating as to why Facebook needs to use their own coin instead of, you know, just traditional dollars or something like that. I think it's because they want more control over the network itself and over the coin in the network. Maybe it's just easier for cross-border kind of payments and things like that. But we'll see. I'm hoping to see more details come out soon. Apparently, there was speculation that it would get announced, like this would get announced at F8, Facebook's developer conference. But unfortunately, nothing was announced there. You know, so maybe we'll get some details in the future. Maybe it just wasn't ready at the time, basically.
Yeah, I wasted 2 hours of my life that I'll never get back watching the FA conference, just waiting to see what this announcement was going to be. And nothing came of it. So that was disappointing. I'm sure the details will be coming out soon. But yeah, like you said, it looks like to be a stable coin and some type of payment network. I'm not really interested in this at all, assuming that it's, you know, built on some kind of like DPoS Facebook run network, right? I mean, if it was kind of potentially built on Quorum, which is kind of like what JPM's doing with JPM coin, and then I would believe that they're going to start interfacing with, say, more public chains or the public Ethereum chain, then I would get a little bit more excited. But I mean, first of all, I wouldn't be excited about a Facebook coin in general, probably even if it was on something like Quorum, but it would bring a lot of publicity to Ethereum, which would be great. I guess this will bring some eyes to crypto in general, but from the details that we've seen so far and that you just kind of read off, I really don't see a point for this. Like, it's their own private network, and you can already do this stuff, like you said, with just digitalized USD solutions that we have today. I guess let's not judge it too early since it's not launched yet, but yeah, it seems, at least to this point, that the odds of it having to do with Ethereum in any way seem extremely low.
Yeah, that was the kind of main point that I wanted to answer, was that is this built on Ethereum or a variant of Ethereum or something else? You know, yeah, as we've discussed in the past, Ethereum is not ready to scale to billions of users, of course. So we'll see what happens. There was speculation that maybe Facebook just acts as like a centralized exchange, and then all the all the payments happen within their exchange system, but you can still withdraw Facebook coin to like your Ethereum wallet or something like that if it was built as an ERC-20 token. Who knows? Speculation. We'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, for general adoption of crypto, I guess it can't really be a bad thing. Like, it's going to get more eyes and ears on the space. As far as like the first product they're launching, I don't think it's going to be anything like us or our listeners are going to be interested in, right? But I guess just in general, you know, it's kind of going with that theme of you're starting to hear much larger companies, right? Samsung, JP Morgan, EY, now Facebook, E-Trade, Fidelity. We're starting to see this kind of plethora of larger corporations start to get interested. So that general theme, it kind of makes me bullish.
Yeah, for sure. And I fully expect it to continue, especially because Consensus has their kind of EEA, which, you know, the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, which helps enterprises build on Ethereum, whether that be public or private implementations. So this definitely isn't slowing down. So yeah, we'll see what happens in the future, basically. So onto project updates. First thing I wanted to talk about, just a quick mention, ethereum.org website got refreshed this week. This has been a meme within the Ethereum community for a long time now. And everyone was always saying, just redirect ethereum.org to ETHub, you know, and all that sort of stuff. That was quite funny. But yeah, so ethereum.org has a brand new look. I think there's a kind of mixed reaction to the actual design of the website, as it's, I guess, design subjective. So, but yeah, so it's got a bunch of new information on there, updated information. It's the whole website's open source as well, so anyone can contribute. And a lot of the website actually points to ETHub's resources, which is really cool to see as well. We actually helped a couple of the guys with this sort of stuff, pointed them in the right direction. We're getting the website set up, and it's good that things point to ETHub, because we've got a lot of valuable information on there that a lot of people can get a lot of use out of. And obviously, if you Google Ethereum, the first result that comes up is ethereum.org. So it's really good for kind of search engine optimization for ETHub as well, which is really good to see. And the last thing I wanted to mention as well was that it's really funny that the ethereum.org website now references Ether as money. This has become like another meme in the community the last few days on Twitter, where everyone's arguing over is Ether money or not. I'm sure you all know our opinions by now. Quick recap, yes, Ether is money, like it's quite obvious. But yeah, so the old Ethereum website didn't specify this about Ether, and it actually avoided talking about Ether as kind of like a financial instrument or a speculative instrument. Obviously, this was because of the legal kind of stuff and regulatory stuff back from the original Ethereum ICO. But now we've moved past that. We have things like the SEC chairman saying that Ether is not a security. Or he doesn't think it's a security, it's his own opinion. So yeah, I think the kind of Ethereum Foundation and Ethereum people as a whole are more comfortable calling it money or store of value, whatever you want to call it these days.
Yeah, I almost fell out of my chair when I saw this tweet. I thought for sure it was like April Fool's or someone had hacked the Ethereum account. We had known it was coming, but all of a sudden it just came so fast. It was like, okay, yeah, sure, you're going to launch it. And then, yeah, it got launched so fast. You know, I guess people have opinions, of course. People in this space have opinions on absolutely everything. They have opinions on the design. You know, I'm not that worried about the design. Could it use some help? Yeah, sure. But, you know, the same, I tweeted out a couple times, it's open source and you can submit pull requests, and I'm sure they'll be open to taking, you know, improvements just like we are on ETHUB and suggestions, right? So let's just be appreciative that we finally made a step in the right direction. Like you mentioned, I'm very appreciative that it mentions Ether as money, or it does mention Ether as money, but it also says like Ethereum's a platform for programmable money or something along those lines, which yeah, has become a meme and a week long debate on Twitter at this point. But yeah, it was cool to see. And of course, my favorite part is ETHUB's linked. Like you said, I think we're linked like 12 or 13 different places, which it's just cool to see because obviously, you know, we've put a lot of hard work into this and we haven't got back anything monetarily for this. So to us, that's kind of like the best type of reward, is to see the site getting used and linked. And that'll obviously help with like our marketing and SEO and Google results search and all that stuff. So, you know, I think it's a good start. The art on there makes it look a little ugly, but at least they have a dark mode and all that stuff. But it's something, right? Like the key with something like that is you don't want to make it have to be really maintainable. Like it should just be something that they can put out there, and it shouldn't be have to be highly maintainable. They can just put it out there and it's relatively simple, guides people and has some links, but you don't want to have a lot of overhead on having to update it because stuff just changes so fast in this space, right? And that's something we've had to be fairly conscious of on ETHUB too. Like you don't want to create so much content that's going to require updating. Like the better value is to create pages that you know are going to last a decent amount of time. So if not, you're updating hundreds of pages every month, right? So I guess I will use this as a shameless plug. We do have I would say we probably have like our beta of our new splash screen and main site design internally figured out. And we're probably pretty close to launching that. I don't want to like directly compete with Ethereum.org or anything, and I'm biased, but I think it looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, hopefully that landing page goes live over the next maybe few days. I don't know. I don't want to promise any timelines. Just depends how much time we have to work on it, basically. But yeah, we just thought we'd do a new splash screen, or I guess a new landing page, because the current one's quite basic. So we wanted to do more to explain to total kind of newbies where they can go to learn, you know, and what ETHUB's all about, basically.
Yeah, I guess one thing too, like I'm tired of people like just immediately complaining on something that's open source and you can go contribute to. Like, don't just be an armchair quarterback on Twitter, right? Like if you have a problem, state it, but then go try and fix it, right? You have the ability to go fix this stuff. And so I was a little disappointed with just how much general negativity and complaining there was around this when it first launched.
Yeah, I guess it's just like crypto in general, especially during a bear market. People love to be negative. But, you know, I guess we're used to that by now. Unfortunately, it's much easier to type something out on Twitter or Reddit than it is to actually go do some work. But, you know, that's life. So next thing I wanted to talk about quickly was Metacash. So this is a new kind of, I think, Ethereum wallet that's launched on Android, not available on iOS yet. But they basically let you pay, let you send DAI without gas fees. So you get to use DAI as fees. Now, this is achieved through meta transactions, which is what we've discussed before, where it kind of like atomically swaps your DAI into ETH. So the fees on the blockchain is still paid in ETH, but you're actually paying the fees on the front end with DAI. This is the proper way to do economic abstraction, not on the base layer where anything can be paid to miners. But yeah, where ETH is still paid to miners under this system and the user just pays DAI for their fees. So yeah, it's great to see this implementation coming online, as meta transactions has been around for a while. I think a couple years at this point as a kind of idea and a spec, and someone's finally implemented it. I think there are actually other implementations out there, but I don't think they've received as much fanfare or been as popular. So yeah, if you have an Android device, you can go download this. The links are all in the newsletter. And you can basically not have to worry about having ETH in your wallet to pay fees, which is amazing, because I recently had a kind of an odd experience at EdCon where I wanted to pay for a t-shirt using DAI, but I had DAI, but I didn't have ETH in my wallet. which is quite funny because my mobile wallets, I mess around with them, so I don't really keep any money on them. But yeah, so it's really good to see something like this come out. So, you know, I would have avoided that situation if I had Metacash, you know, instead of whatever other wallet I was using.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, this is huge for user experience. I mean, you basically hit all the points on the head, but you know, I run into this a lot with wrapped Ether too. Like you've got a lot of wrapped Ether in an account, but you maybe overwrapped it and you don't have enough Ether left to continue your transactions. It's like, oh shit, you got to send it over. I like cleaning wallets, so that means I got to send it to an exchange and from the exchange to the wallet. So this is great. And also, like you mentioned, like this isn't implementing economic abstraction. Like this is guaranteeing the value of ETH at the base layer still. So kind of how this happens is, you know, you send it and it's converted in the backend and the fee is actually still paid in Ether. But to the user, they're paying fees in their own ERC-20 that they want to use. Now that I work for Gnosis, I don't know, do I have to give some kind of warning every time I shill Gnosis? But they're the first wallet that I saw implement this. So on there, you can pay gas fees with certain ERC-20s. You can't do it with DAI, but I believe it's coming soon. But yeah, it's really cool to kind of see these, you know, just knocking down these user experience barriers, right? Like if we get to a point where we can eliminate this auction fee model in EIP-1559, which we've talked about a lot, at the same time, you know, users aren't having to now bid for on blocks. It's kind of just predetermined for them in their wallet. And you can pay for this and stuff other than ETH. Like that's huge, right? Like that's a gigantic difference in user experience than what we have today. So I think slowly kind of knocking these down is going to be huge for adoption.
Yeah, I think you are allowed to shill Gnosis, especially because that team is really good and has a lot of great products coming out. But maybe people don't know about it because, I mean, a lot of the teams in crypto don't have great marketing. They build awesome things, but then no one hears about them. I guess that's what we try to do with ETH Hub and the newsletter and podcast is try to put the spotlight on all of these teams. So I think that as long as you're not telling people to go buy GNO tokens, I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly. This is definitely not investment advice. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think one of the things we try to do a lot with the ETH Hub and ETH Hub's Twitter and our personal is just amplify products that maybe don't have as much of a social platform as we have. So, you know, that should always be a goal of ours. I agree.
For sure, for sure. So one last thing about the project updates I wanted to talk about this week, CDP Saver. So this is a third-party tool built for MakerDAO. It's live on the Ethereum mainnet today. It has a bunch of different features at the moment. So one of them is called Repay. So this lets you increase your CDP's ratio, and makes it safer by taking part of the collateral out of your CDP and using it to pay back part of the DAI debt all within a single transaction. So it basically just makes it a lot nicer experience to pay down your CDP while kind of unlocking some of your ETH in your CDP. And there's features planned for the future. One of the features that I'm most excited about is automatic protection. So basically what this does is it lets you set a liquidation price on CDP Saver that you want the service to automatically withdraw some of your ETH from your CDP to pay down the DAI debt to lower your liquidation price. Now, I think this is going to be really great for people just because obviously, you can't be watching your CDP 24/7. And if you're one that likes to play with fire with a low liquidation price, looking at you, 3228, this would be a great tool for you to use. So yeah, great to see these more third-party tools for MakerDAO coming online.
Yeah, 3228, I saw wiped a lot of debt in the last few days, just a couple hours ago too. I think he's down to, I want to say it's less than $1 million in debt or something like that. So he must be, those stability fees must be catching up to him for sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what to call this. One thing I'm like, probably my number one interest right now as far as development is going is this layer. I don't know what you call it. Like, I guess for now, I'll just call it like the UX layer. It's almost like the layer right above kind of the base contracts of the base dApps. You know, Veil, Guesser, like these tools that are putting user experience on top of CDPs. Like, this is to me what I'm most interested in right now, right? It's kind of creating very, you know, easy to use and feature specific applications on top of the contracts or even on top of just the base applications that are out there, like the CDP portal. I think this is what people want, right? I still think a lot of the just kind of the base apps are pretty crude. And I think, you know, the teams building say like the Maker CDP portal, they probably want to focus more on like the development of multi-collateral DAI and DAI savings rate and kind of more work on their core product and contracts, and are probably very welcoming to these kind of third-party user experience apps being built on top. I think this is where, you know, we're going to see a lot of cool development out of this area in the next year or two.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of these layers are coming online, as you said. We don't really know. I guess some people are calling it like, I don't know, middleware sometimes. I don't think it directly applies to this. Or as you said, like a UX layer or a kind of user-facing layer. I guess we can refer to that, you know, as that for now. But the terminology in general in crypto is kind of bad. Like layer one, layer two, layer three. You know, it's just weird. Some people call smart contracts a layer two on top of Ethereum, which is weird. But yeah, I think we'll leave the terminology up in the air for now and see what the community kind of settles on.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely layers of on the application side too. Yeah, I guess this is kind of, I guess they're almost like third-party apps, right? It's almost like if you had, well, Twitter has like restricted its API, so third-party apps have died, but it's almost like when you had a lot of apps building third-party apps on top of Twitter, right? They're not actually built by Twitter, but they use the underlying technology and just kind of build out better and more specific features.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of protocols building around this at the moment, like the graph for like a data layer as well to just pull data out of the Ethereum blockchain. So there's a lot you can do depending on what you want to do, depending on what you want to interact with, whether it's the Ethereum blockchain itself or different dApps on Ethereum. So yeah, I expect a lot more of these services to come online soon enough. So speaking of Maker, quick mention of the DAI peg this week. We saw the stability fee go to 19.5%. That seems to be a kind of sweet spot because DAI is almost back to its peg. I think it's around 99 cents. You know, its peg's obviously a dollar. This has been a long and frustrating journey, I know, for many people. Of, you know, we started at 0.5% on the stability fee, and, you know, we've gone up 19% in a couple of months, I think it is, or 3 or 4 months or something like that. Time's gone so fast, I'm probably getting that wrong. But yeah, it seems to be working. The total DAI supply is under 83 million last time I checked. It peaked at 95 million. But you know, as we record this podcast, I'm looking at one of my other monitors and ETH is currently pumping quite hard. So maybe people are going to start drawing DAI again to go long on ETH, which is what we've traditionally seen as the main problem here. But yeah, we'll see. I looked at the charts and looked at all the different graphs, which I've actually linked a nice resource in the newsletter under the miscellaneous section of Ecosystem Bits. It's a bunch of different DAI graphs that let you track the DAI price against the various metrics. You can go there. But I've been watching those and it seems consistent that the price is, you know, it was at 98 cents a couple of days ago and has kind of been pushing up towards the 99 cent mark and obviously continuing up to a dollar. So yeah, great to see that the stability fee has done its job, even though it's been frustrating and annoying for people who had CDPs. It definitely gives us a lot of data to work from and kind of, you know, what works better in the future will remain to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. It got it. It worked systematically. It worked. I'm not sure if it worked in like being the best solution per se. I still, you know, I think going up to 20 so fast. Well, we've talked about this. Everyone knows my opinion on it. So I guess I'll hold it back for now. I mean, I really want to see. I can't wait to see multi-collateral DAI and DAI savings rate go live to help this. And I still think we're going to see a lot of interesting applications and tools built on top of DAI to kind of like take this risk away from customers and offer them unique products. So I think, you know, in the long run, it's probably not too bad of a thing. And I guess a lot of people learned about how the actual system works through this. But like you said, it looks like Ether's on a little bit of a run here. Who knows? By the time we release this tomorrow, it could be back to 150. But it'll be interesting to see if people start ferociously drawing DAI again.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I'm going to have to tweet it out if they are, just you know, to update our listeners. So another thing that I noticed this week on chain was that 0x volume is picking up again on the various 0x relayers. Now, the volume has been flat since about December, since people will remember DDEX, the DDEX relayer forked off the 0x protocol and kind of created their own token and took 50% of the liquidity with them, which actually killed a lot more than 50% of the liquidity for 0x, as I think people lost a little bit of confidence in the project or the protocol itself, which was unfortunate. But yeah, the volume seems to be picking up. I put a picture in the newsletter that shows over March and April, the volume, I think, doubled since as compared to the rest of January, February. So yeah, it's good to see that it's picking up. We I remember that ZeroX announced the market making program as well, so that might be a reason. Hopefully we can see this growth continue, but I think it's too early to tell. Might revisit this in a few months and see, you know, what the general trend is like for ZeroX.
Yeah, I mean, the team has kept building and pumping out stuff, right, and new features and whatnot. So I'm sure that's probably catching up. I mean, they were probably one of the biggest victims of the bear market, right? Like the decentralized exchanges in general, like a lot of liquidity dried up, and we all know what happens when liquidity dries up, right? You drop users and you're going to drop volume and people just aren't going to trade. So, you know, I think it seems like the market's starting to recover. How long that recovery is going to take, I don't know. But, you know, I think decentralized exchanges will start to benefit. And we've talked a lot about StarkDex too, which is built on ZeroX. And I'm sure they're all kind of anxiously awaiting kind of launching that and be able to try that because, you know, starting to bring, well, it'll be privacy too, but mainly what they're going for with StarkDex is speed, which will really bring in the liquidity, I think. Because right now it's still, you know, it's slow, it's a little expensive to use, just like every other decentralized exchange. But I do think, you know, especially we're starting to see more centralized exchange drama with Tether and Bitfinex. And, you know, you know we're going to see another hack. So I do think that we're going to see a pop in life in decentralized exchanges, especially during the next bull run.
Yeah, as you said, Starkware is coming online. You know, it's going to bring scalability. I think that's kind of the crux of decentralized exchanges at the moment. I mean, we have something like Binance Dex, which launched, but it's not really a decentralized exchange. It's completely centralized, and the only things you can trade on there are tokens that have been kind of migrated over to Binance Chain, and at the moment that's all total like shit coins, basically, for lack of a better word. I don't think there's been any good projects that migrated over there because there's no smart contracts or anything on that chain. So why would a project migrate over there if, you know, unless they're just like a token and they just want to have like, I don't know, a Binance Chain pump, which if you look at the charts, a lot of those kind of things have died out, actually.
Yeah, I mean, we see that whole Binance Chain migration effect seems to be dying out. I think pretty much everyone that's gone over, like it had like a 2-hour pump and they're already back in the red versus Bitcoin. They all pretty much trade against Bitcoin. So that was kind of a funny 2-day thing in crypto that seems to have already died out. But what's really interesting on the ZeroX, that, and like you said, you linked it in the newsletter, but that data has volume and fills. So when I first looked at it, I was like, oh, maybe there's just, you know, a couple, you know, whales that I've been trading a little bit more. But if you actually look at the fills data, like how many trades have actually been executed, that's up a lot too. I want to say it was like near the bottom, I think it was like 200 fills a day. And just a few weeks ago, I'd peaked up near like 2,500 fills a day. So that's coming back pretty strong. So it's not just the volume too. It's actual users and amount of trades, which is good to see.
Yeah, I'm curious if there's some other reason as to why that extra volume has come in. Maybe I'll do some more digging. Because there are a lot of things that can tap into, the ZeroX protocol through different relays and different front ends and things like that. I'll dig into it. And if I find anything interesting, I'll definitely post it to Twitter.
I sent a Twitter thread coming.
Yeah, one of my famous Twitter threads for sure. Cool. So tweets this week. One really cool tweet this week was Elon Musk tweeting Ethereum. This got the Ethereum community absolutely like, oh man, it was like a bunch of, I don't know how to describe it. It was just a bunch of people getting really excited really fast. And then Elon Musk replied to his tweet and said, JK. Now, I mean, there's a bit of backstory to this. Recently, Elon Musk has been under kind of scrutiny for his tweets about Tesla and how he's kind of tweeting different things and it's affecting the stock price. He famously tweeted, taking Tesla private at $420, funds secured. So since then, he's been under scrutiny from the SEC, and they've actually got, I think there's a lawyer assigned to him now to kind of review his tweets so that he doesn't participate in this kind of manipulation. So I think that's what he kind of did with Ethereum, where he tweeted Ethereum out, and then I don't think we saw any kind of pump in the price because of this. I think there was like a slight bump, but I don't know if that was because of Elon Musk's tweet. But then, yeah, he said JK. But this didn't stop Vitalik from jumping in and saying to Elon, hey, you should come to our DevCon in October. And then Elon Musk replied with, stop giving away free ETH, which is obviously a callback to a lot of the scams going on in 2017 about giving away free ETH. And then Elon Musk later replied to the same tweet saying, what should be built on Ethereum? And this is where stuff got interesting because Vitalik, of course, jumped in. I think it was like a 5-part tweet thread where he listed all the things that he should that should be built on Ethereum. He listed, I think from memory, the first thing he listed was like a global kind of financial system, obviously because DeFi is quite popular lately. But I'm hoping Elon Musk read the rest of his tweets and saw the power of Ethereum, and maybe they, you know, they got in contact, and maybe Elon will be at DevCon. That would be amazing. But yeah, we'll see what happens. It was a great Twitter thread in general because it got Ethereum on a lot of people's minds. I tweeted out that Google search trends kind of spiked instantly for the word Ethereum as soon as Elon tweeted about it, because Elon Musk has huge reach, right? He's a worldwide kind of celebrity, has over 20 million Twitter followers. So a lot of people would have gotten exposure to Ethereum just from this tweet. So yeah, it was an exciting week on Twitter, to say the least.
Yeah, I definitely geeked out pretty hard when this happened. I mean, and then Vitalik and Elon talking to each other, two of my favorite, you know, inventors or entrepreneurs or however you want to put them, talking was pretty awesome. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, it brought a lot of eyes. Like you said, you tweeted out the Google Trends and it had a huge spike. So obviously people were, you know, searching for Ethereum. So in general, that can't hurt, right? And I think, of course, the Bitcoiners are harping on the JK thing. Like I had probably 200 Bitcoiners reply to me with the JK tweet when I was like, because I tweeted out Bitcoin can have Jack, Ethereum has Elon. And of course that ruffled some feathers, which potentially might've been a little intentional. I like to amuse myself on Twitter from time to time if people haven't realized that, but I don't think the JK was really real. Like I think he's actually interested in Ethereum. He talked about crypto once on a podcast and the host kept asking about Bitcoin and he acknowledged it, but then in his response he mentioned Ethereum too, right? So he clearly knows about it. I'm sure he's interested in it. Like he's a very, very incredibly smart person that I'm sure has dove into crypto and blockchain projects, and you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum are at the top. I don't really think much else out there should even be considered by people at this point. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he kind of tweets about it in the future, if that was just a one and done. I personally think the JK was exactly like you said, just making sure he didn't get whacked. I'm sure his lawyer texted him or something. It was like, hey, you can't just be tweeting out crypto while the SEC is looking at you for manipulating the Tesla stock price. So obviously it would be a dream if Elon was interested in Ethereum. I'm sure it's very on the basic level at this point. Obviously there's some really cool and interesting use cases that could be implemented into Teslas, especially on like micropayments and things like that. But you know, I'm sure even if he's interested, we're 10 or 15 years away from anything real like that.
Yeah, speaking of him getting involved in Ethereum on a deeper level, there was a lot of people that replied to him, obviously kind of, I wouldn't say shilling, but like showcasing their projects. I know Hudson Jameson, he's got a project where he did micropayments for electric cars and things like that. So obviously he sent the video to Elon Musk to view. I mean, of course, Elon didn't reply because Twitter's, you know, for him would be a disaster. But yeah, it was good to see that. I mean, I shilled ETHUB, of course. There was a lot of other people in there kind of showcasing or shilling their own projects. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Maybe Elon starts tweeting about Ethereum more often. I mean, he's a very busy guy in general, so I don't know if he will. But hopefully Vitalik and him got in direct contact, and I know I'm still hoping that he'll be at DevCon. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my reply for him to come on Into the Ether.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that tweet. You asked him to come on. Maybe. I mean, we've got Vitalik on, so yeah. You know, why not?
Never know.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So moving on, last thing I wanted to talk about was an excellent, excellent blog post from Evan Van Ness this week. This basically put into words a lot of the stuff that we talk about on Twitter and on the podcast. So if you haven't seen the blog post yet, I recommend going to read it. It's linked in the newsletter, but it basically covers the recent Aragon votes for the Aragon, for the different Aragon governance proposals that were put forward on the Aragon platform. And it shows that one whale was able to sway the vote on two important proposals. So one of those proposals was that to keep Aragon focused on Ethereum, not Polkadot. This was famously put forward by Amin. Now, this was actually, the yes vote was actually winning on this until a whale that had about, I think it was 800 tokens or something, came in and obviously voted no and swayed the vote completely. So this is just one person swaying the vote with this on-chain system. Now, we've spoken about our kind of bearish stance on on-chain governance a lot on both Twitter and on the podcast, and this kind of like affirms our beliefs here. And there was, a lot of good back and forth once this article was published from the Aragon founders and people working on Aragon and different on-chain systems. there was, I know that the Gnosis guys also chimed in and said, why not just do a commit reveal where people can commit voting tokens, but they don't actually reveal their votes until a later date. And then from there, it's kind of locked in and no one else can vote. I think that's a better system than just being completely transparent, because then people obviously can sway the vote like they did. So yeah, I definitely recommend going and reading that blog post to get the full picture. But it just, I mean, it just, it's just crazy, right? It just affirms our beliefs that, you know, a whale can sway the vote. I mean, the other vote that was swayed was the Edgeware lock drop. So basically, Edgeware is this new smart contract parachain that's going to be stood up for Polkadot. And in order to get Edge tokens, you can lock up your ETH and get them. So there was a proposal put forward that Aragon used their ETH to lock up on Edgeware and get Edge tokens. And this vote, of course, it was leading one way and then got swayed the other way by the whale. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy to see this documented so great in this blog post. It just details everything. So, yeah, go read it.
Yeah, for sure. Great blog post. And obviously, we're big fans of Evan. He puts out a lot of good stuff, including obviously Week in Ethereum. But he puts out some blog posts here and there too. And this was a really good one. I mean, I had tweeted a little bit about this as well. Everyone, I guess, knows both of our views on on-chain governance. I maybe am a little bit more vocal on mine, but and a little bit more negative on it, maybe, and maybe too negative at times. And I think maybe the Aragon team is, I don't know if they don't like me, but they seem to be a little bit upset with me for kind of calling this out. But you know, it's kind of what their product is about, and I would expect it to be, you know, a little more fleshed out and kind of thought out a bit more at this point. The fact that it's just a coin vote that goes down to the wire like this, and I had put out a tweet thread probably 2 or 3 weeks ago now where I kind of calculated the cost of how much a whale could just borrow a token and swing an on-chain vote given low voter turnout. It's like a couple $100s. So, you know, like Aragon or Ant tokens aren't on Compound right now, but eventually they will be on like Multicollateral DAI, things like that, right? And all these DeFi app, so you'll be able to borrow Ant tokens from people. And if you can just borrow it at the last second and pay like 5 minutes of interest and then just go make vote on it, you're not even an Ant holder and you could swing votes if you wanted to. So, you know, there's a lot to learn here. Can they get there and figure it out over time? Maybe. I'm still not convinced at all that on-chain governance is going to be figured out, but I'm sure, you know, over the years, it'll at least get better than where it is today. So, a lot of lessons learned here. I guess we can iterate on it and try and get better. But this is for sure why, you know, at this point, I definitely have no interest whatsoever in this kind of governance process being in the base layer. I'm also very cautious of being invested in any, you know, app that has this as well, because I think once people realize how easy it is to kind of manipulate it, it's going to happen. And, you know, maybe some experimentation will happen, it'll get better, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I mean, we're generally bearish on on-chain governance, but I want to make it clear that at least for me, I'm not sure, like you seem to be a lot more bearish than I am, but at least for me, I think that a lot of this stuff can be figured out eventually. But as you said, I don't want to see this on Ethereum at all, like on-chain governance on Ethereum at all. Even if like it gets figured out, there's going to be trade-offs, right? So I think that we keep Ethereum the way it is in terms of its governance process. We try to improve it from there, and we let the on-chain stuff play out on the various dApps, which I'm not against at all. I'm happy to see this play out for the dApps. Like Aragon can do it. You know, there's like Maker's doing it, 0x is doing it. That's fine. These experiments should play out on, you know, the higher level of Ethereum, not on the base protocol, inside the protocol itself. So excited to see what the different teams come up with. I know Aragon, I mean, their whole kind of things around governance. So they're definitely working on various solutions to this. And there are actually a lot of smart people working on this and a lot of smart people bullish on the idea. So I think they'll figure out a way that works for them eventually. Whether it works for Ethereum itself is another question, because of the fact that a different distribution of tokens. Ethereum itself is not just one dApp, but actually it's home to all the dApps. So do we have ETH holders at odds with different token holders? Do they do something that, you know, the rest of the network doesn't like? Of course, there's so many different issues with on-chain governance that need to be figured out, probably won't be figured out for a while. I mean, I'd say decades at this point, where we get to like an ideal solution that most people agree works very well. So until that happens, I don't think we should implement on-chain governance at the base layer. But I, you know, if it happens in 10 years that we figure it out, I don't think Ethereum's going to be changeable to that state. I think Ethereum's going to be too big and too kind of set in stone in that point that changing the entire governance system would be near impossible.
Oh yeah, I fully agree. It'll never happen on Ethereum. It just won't. And there's other protocols out there that kind of sell it as a feature now. So if that's something people are interested in, they can just go use those.
All right, that's it for this week. So yeah, thanks everyone. Go to ethub.substack.com to subscribe to the newsletter or to view everything that we've talked about on this podcast. And you can also go there to subscribe to the podcast as well, as we're publishing the podcast to Substack now. So it's all in kind of one home. It seems to be working really well. We're getting more traffic to both in the Substack and the website from doing this as well, which is great. So yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast.